Welcome to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. My name, Zachary Smith. Your name, insert that here. We are back again for NXT this week. An interesting show to talk about from my perspective. Always makes things easy on me before we get started. As always, you can follow me on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT. That's ZachNXT over on Twitter. I'm always active over there if you want to get in touch with the show. Now, this week we are coming off the Great American Bash weeks 1 and 2, the We Don't Counter program, You Counter program, Shut Up edition of NXT. Usually on a show after a takeover or a special, we have what amounts to a clip show recapping the pay-per-view and then a couple of matches dispersed therein. In this case, we basically had a new show. We had some recaps of our main event from week two between Adam Cole and Keith Lee. But for the most part, this was a brand new show. And that's always a lot easier to talk about. One of my first shows was a setup for a takeover, and it was a lot of interviews. And that was a little bit tricky to do just because there wasn't a ton to talk about except recap what people said word for word, which is kind of hard. But in this case, I have a lot to talk about. As you know, generally we cover the news and the notes going on in wrestling, and I have to be honest, my inspiration for this did not come until right before I hit record. I thought I was just going to jump right into the show and have nothing to talk about, and then what would we do, you know? If I don't have anything to talk about, what am I going to talk about, you know? Like, what happens then? Nothing. Nothing happens. I sit here staring at my computer like I was, and then you just don't get a show, and then what are you going to do with the rest of your week? See how that would be bad, you see? But I was inspired to talk about NXT and AEW and the quote-unquote Wednesday Night Wars and the ratings wars. And it was spurred on by Chris Jericho, whether he was doing a little bit of a work or he was quite serious talking about the fact that although AEW got beat, I believe it was both weeks by NXT, very surprisingly, at least to me, they crushed in the, I believe it's 18 to 49 demographic, which Chris Jericho was noting is the important one. A lot of people took that as just sour grapes and not wanting to just admit that their ratings weren't as good for something for WWE's end that was simply a counter program. Now, with Chris Jericho, it's tricky because generally, when he has a problem with something, it's because it's part of an angle or part of a work or part of him being a heel, something to that effect. It clouds it a little bit when it's definitely not a setup for anything. NXT and AEW definitely aren't going to be working together. I don't imagine Chris Jericho is going to be back in the WWE anytime soon, if ever. So it seemed like just something that Chris Jericho was saying. And a lot of people took that as sour grapes and really kind of discredited everything that he had to say about it because, well, it seemed like you lost a week and were trying to hold on to something. Same thing with Tony Khan, who mentioned it was an important demographic and they were happy to have done well in it. I think Tony Khan's was definitely well-intentioned and he was simply proud. I don't know about Jericho. Now, got me thinking about that whole concept as a whole, the ratings war, quote-unquote, between the two. Ratings are interesting because if you talk to one fan, they will tell you that ratings don't matter at all. If you talk to another, they'll tell you that ratings mean absolutely everything. They're the be-all and end-all. I tend to fall in the middle of that spectrum. I think that ratings are very important. It's partially a reflection of how many people watch your show. And if you put on a show, the whole point is for people to watch it. I do this podcast because I want people to listen to it. Otherwise, it would just be me talking into this microphone for myself and my mom, who is my biggest fan and was the first fan of this show. Hi, Mom. Now, I obviously want people to listen. AEW and NXT obviously want people to watch. So on that front, I do understand why it is important for AEW to establish themselves and get good ratings just as a TV show. But also, when everything was put on Wednesday and then WWE started putting an hour on USA before the show to compete and is counter-programming, it makes it interesting to kind of compare them. Because when AEW first came around, NXT was just at Full Sail University. A great crowd, but it was the same crowd every time, and it didn't feel big. AEW was doing sold-out shows, or at least well-sold shows in cities like Chicago or Las Vegas, and they felt like a bigger deal. Now, obviously, that has been curbed some by coronavirus, and AEW had their workers at ringside well before WWE did, so it still felt like AEW was ahead. And because we are comparing two TV shows that happen to be wrestling and happen to be on a Wednesday, everybody kind of floods back to the Monday Night War era of WWE, Raw, and WCW Monday Nitro, where you kind of lived and died by ratings. Eric Bischoff's whole podcast was titled 83 Weeks with Eric Bischoff because of WCW's success in that 83 weeks where they were undefeated. Now, in the long run, it didn't matter because if you hear anybody who was in WCW talk about it, it was simply because of the AOL Time Warner merger and incompetent management. I would submit that that is true, and it's also true that they were putting out a terrible product, and it was a matter of time because it was very dysfunctional. But every week, people would look at ratings, and both shows were doing really well, but they were measured against each other. That makes sense, because if you are a competing show, whether they say they are or not, they are, you want to get a higher rating. And AEW's been doing very well on that front. It feels new, it feels exciting, it feels, frankly, like a better television product a lot of the time. I do also understand fans that say they don't care, because you can enjoy both. I'm the host of the NXT podcast, and I still watch AEW every chance that I get. Now, I'll watch NXT first, not only because it is my favorite brand of wrestling, but because, well, it's what I do. It's kind of my whole thing here on the podcast. But by no means am I going to not watch AEW. And I certainly don't go looking for the ratings. A lot of times on Twitter, it will pop up and somebody tweeting AEW this many, NXT this many. I don't look at it as, oh, AEW got them or NXT got them. I look at it as, wow, a lot of people watched wrestling on Wednesday, and that's really cool. And I think that that's the important takeaway. It's not AEW getting 700,000 and NXT getting 685,000. It's combine those two numbers and a lot of people watched wrestling. It's nothing like the Monday Night War era, certainly, but a lot of people are watching wrestling. Since AEW's come around, the NXT folks and the AEW folks have become very territorial about their promotions. I understand that as a fan. I want AEW to do very well. I want NXT to do very well. I want AEW to be around forever because I want there to be competition because that's the only way WWE gets any better. We haven't necessarily seen that take shape now, but I think when we have new leadership in WWE, we'll see that happen. And we've seen historically WWE does its best work when it's fighting. And I think that rather than thinking of it as, oh, this show did well, this show didn't, think about it as both shows are doing well, and that's a reflection of wrestling as a whole. And I just feel like we don't need to focus on the rating battle every single week. I think we need to focus on the fact that the ratings together are really what matters, because that means people are enjoying wrestling on a Wednesday night. Whether you're strictly AEW or strictly WWE or watch one before the other, doesn't matter. You're still watching wrestling. And people watching wrestling is good for wrestling. It's good for AEW. It's good for NXT and WWE. It's good for Impact. It's good for everybody. So I personally hope that this continues, and I hope that they have a healthy competition. But WWE saying that it's a marathon, not a sprint, And then Jericho saying, oh, it's these demographics matter. That's not helping. That just comes off as petty. That comes off as territorial. That comes off as you don't want wrestling to do well. You want your favorite show to do well. And if only one show does well, we have a situation like before AEW where WWE was on top of the world and a lot of times didn't deserve it based on the product they were putting out. So my point here is just try to enjoy wrestling. You're going to run into a lot of people that take everything WWE does or everything AEW does and try and put a negative spin on it because they have a quote-unquote home team. There aren't home teams. The home team is wrestling. The home team is there being more of it and there being different options for the men and women that put their bodies and time away from their families on the line. And that's always been the most important thing to me. And I urge you to think about that as well the next time the ratings come out and maybe you want to brag about your favorite show. But today we're talking about the real favorite show. And other than the NXT podcast, that is NXT. And as I said, we are coming off the Great American Bash counter program week 2. And we have a recap of Adam Cole versus Keith Lee from last week. Keith Lee winning the NXT title and the North American title, retaining that. The whole show felt like it was built around that last week, that main event, and it definitely should have been based on the card that was presented, but also that main event definitely didn't disappoint. I certainly wish that there had been a crowd, like I do for everything that happens in wrestling, but this is one of the few matches since coronavirus broke out that felt great even without a crowd. I didn't think of, oh man, I wish there was a crowd at any point during the match. It didn't happen until I was thinking about it afterward. And that's a real credit to what Keith Lee and Adam Cole went out and did. There's only been a few of those matches. The Boneyard match with AJ Styles and The Undertaker, Edge and Orton, the second match. There's been a few, but not that many. A lot of them really depend on the crowd. That's what wrestling is built around. This one really felt special and felt important. We cut to different NXT superstars saying that Keith Lee now has a target on his back and to watch out. And it ends with Karrion Kross saying TikTok, really setting the idea of, yes, Keith Lee made history. Keith Lee is the NXT and the North American champion. But all he has done is he's put two targets on his back instead of one. Keith Lee is undoubtedly the man in NXT, and that means everybody's coming for you. And so we have Keith Lee coming out first. The two titles together look really cool. I didn't think I would ever see somebody hold both. I thought that they would always have the main and second-tier titles separate. You don't see unifications a lot or double championship matches a lot, but it was really cool to see that high stakes, and now it's really cool to see Keith Lee undoubtedly have the strap put on him and the rocket put on him and NXT saying, nope, this is our guy. This is who we're going into the future with. It occurs to me that Keith Lee is wearing his ring gear and just a sleeveless shirt over it, so he's certainly ready to fight somebody. Keith Lee's walking to the ring, and it occurred to me that some of Keith Lee's facials are similar to what The Rock used to do, turning his head, the smiles, the thing with the eyebrow to a lesser degree, but Keith Lee's are more subtle. The Rock's obviously were exaggerated and worked really well for him, but Keith Lee has a little bit of The Rock in him with the charisma. It's kind of a quiet charisma. And that's important to have because he doesn't need to scream and shout to get your attention. He can do it with just a look, and not a lot of people can do that. Keith Lee goes to lift both titles, and he struggles for just a second because of all the gold he has to lift. That was great. He says, now it's back to reality. He said, I know in the back, everybody back there wants an opportunity that I have earned. He said, I didn't do this on my own. Opportunity created this. He said, I'm not a self-made man. He shouts out his trainer, Killer Tim Brooks, who I believe passed away fairly recently. He also thanks the NXT Universe for accepting him and helping him get here. So congratulations to you, by the way. Also congratulations to me. We helped him get there, which technically means we were like cornermen, which means technically we were like managers, which means technically you and I are also the North American and NXT champion. So first, congratulations, champ. I left a pause there so you could say congratulations, champ, too. Thank you so much. You know, it feels really great. I just want to thank my mom. I want to thank everybody who got me here. you know what, we'll release my acceptance speech is like a different thing. We'll save that because, you know, I don't want to take away from this moment. I really want it to be about Keith Lee. If you want to work on your speech, you can do it as well, because we really did something important. And he said, again, I am not, excuse me, I am not a self-made man. He says he has one more person to thank. He said, this person helped me more than he knew. And he asked for Dominic Dijakovic to come out. He does point out that he doesn't know basically where Dijakovic is going to end up, hinting that Dijakovic was supposed to be on the main roster by now. I thought he would be anyway. He's certainly getting called up. This felt like, especially with what happens later, like Dijakovic's send-off from NXT. I think he'll do really well on the main roster. He's big, he can talk, he can wrestle his butt off. And that's really what you need, especially the talking part. He didn't get a chance to do it a lot in NXT, but he can definitely do it. And he doesn't have an accent, which sometimes seems to bother Vince McMahon. I don't know why. Like Drew McIntyre, he's fine with. Shinsuke Nakamura, he's not. It's one of those things where you never really know until they're there. But Dijakovic has a clear speaking voice. He projects well, and he gets his point across well. So you really just have to fine-tune him. You don't have to completely change him. And so I think and I hope that Dijakovic is going to do really, really well on the main roster whenever he does debut, which seems like it could be as early as next week now, because this felt like a traditional NXT send-off. You go out near the top, you kind of fall on your sword, you end up putting somebody else over, and then you're out of there after that, and then you get a fresh slate on the main roster. So he brings out Dijakovic. Dijakovic has a shirt on that's a tribute to Shad Gaspard. I love that. That's really cool. I saw it on AEW too. Some people wearing Shad Gaspard shirts or armbands. That's really cool. He's a really inspiring story even before the way that he died protecting his son. And a very underrated character. And it's unfortunate that I was a huge Crime Time fan, but it's unfortunate that Shad and JTG were put into that very stereotypical kind of tag team idea. But they made a frankly borderline racially insensitive, I'm going to be polite, thing and idea, and made it into something more than it ever had a right to be, because they were both so talented. And I was really looking forward to what Shad was going to do in the future, not just in wrestling, but in games. He was, I believe he was the model for Kratos for God of War. He was doing some movie stuff. He was an extra in some movies. I want to say he was producing. He was going to do big things. And it's really cool that the wrestling world isn't going to forget about him. And whether it was friends of his or people that were just inspired by his story, that's just really cool to see that his memory is still being kept alive. And unfortunately, it was way too soon for him, but you can only hope that he would have been proud looking down on that. So hopefully, if that's the kind of thing you believe, then he's smiling right now, because the fans certainly aren't going to forget him, and the boys and girls in the back definitely aren't either. Dijakovic was the first guy to come out last week and congratulate Keith Lee. Keith Lee was walking up the entrance ramp, and Dijakovic jumped on his back and was celebrating with him. Mia Yim also came out after that, but Dijakovic and Keith Lee really appear to be really, really good friends, and it's honestly adorable, and I love it. I love when guys are just clearly good friends. Keith Lee says, the competition between us is one of the things that propelled me to new opportunities. He says, you've tested my limits like nobody else. I thought about it. That's probably true. Dijakovic is the one that's gotten probably the most out of Keith Lee, other than Adam Cole, who rocketed him to a different stratosphere. But Dijakovic, Keith Lee were some of the best stuff that NXT has ever done in terms of in the ring. And it was always exhilarating to watch, and it felt like a real rivalry. I mean, generally Keith Lee came out on top, so it was kind of a lopsided rivalry, but when you got into match time, you never really knew who was going to win, and it was always great. It always felt big, and you always knew you were going to get a great match, and that's rare. He says the best way to represent these championships is competition. He said, so I talked to William Regal earlier, and I told him the first challenger should be you. So Keith Lee wants to do the match tonight. He says, Dijakovic does. Well, when do you want to do this? Keith Lee says, well, I was thinking, well, I'm wearing my gear. You know I'm always ready. How about we do it tonight? Dijakovic starts to talk. Keith Lee interrupts him and says, shush. Just say yes. Dijakovic puts the mic back up to his mouth, says yes, and we have ourselves what I thought was going to be a main event. It doesn't end up being. And it occurred to me, so they make this match, and on another week of NXT, it would have been the main event. It wasn't here, but generally that kind of thing becomes the main event. It always makes me wonder, in kayfabe, or in the context of just suspending your disbelief and just thinking about the show, I always wonder what happens if that segment doesn't happen. Like, what happens if on NXT, Keith Lee doesn't set up a main event with Dijakovic, or Seth Rollins on Raw doesn't set it up with Rey Mysterio? Like, are the general managers, do they plan a main event, and then Keith Lee makes his own, and then William Regal just tears that sheet off his legal pad and tosses it in the trash? Or is William Regal watching the opening segment with his fingers crossed going, I really hope somebody makes a main event, because right now I got nothing. And if they don't come out here, then we're just going to have dead air at the end. It's always funny to me to picture the general manager biting his or her fingernails, just hoping upon hope that we get a main event that they didn't plan, or being really mad at Keith Lee every week because he comes out and makes his own main event, and darn it, I was going to do this match, and you changed it. I always get a kick out of it. We cut to outside the Performance Center, and Tegan Nox is arriving for her title match versus Io Shirai. This is really good for Tegan Nox. She's made her way back from that devastating injury in the women's tournament, and now she's here to challenge Io Shirai. Tegan's definitely not going to win this match, but she can absolutely be propelled to a different level by this match. If this were Charlotte Flair, I would be a little bit more nervous of the kind of match that agents would want to have with Charlotte Flair, but with Io Shirai, I feel confident that Tegan's not going to win, but she's going to be made, for lack of better terminology. And so next, it's going to be Damian Priest versus Cameron Grimes. I'm ready for Damian Priest to move on past this. This feud has got him fully turned babyface or good guy after his match with Finn Balor kind of started him turning face. But this story's kind of running thin for me. Cameron Grimes is a really, really good, sneaky, scared heel. But I don't necessarily care about him the way I want to. And I don't know why. I don't hate him, and he doesn't make me mad. He just doesn't do a lot for me, and it's definitely not him. He's a fantastic heel. I don't know what's missing for me personally, or if I'm just alone on this, but he's just not doing it for me. But clearly he's doing something right, because he got Damian Priest fully face. He got sympathy on Damian Priest, who's much bigger than him, and he made it believable that he could sneak away with a win. He's really, really good. I'm just ready for this story to be over. It feels like it's been going on forever, and that's not what the case, but it feels like that. I also don't like his finishing move, the cave-in, which is that double foot stomp he uses as a finisher. It's usually a running double foot stomp, just because it never looks good when he does it. Kofi Kingston usually has the same problem. He does the same move. It's not his finisher. But the move just usually, and most of the time, doesn't look any good. And I think, I'm not a wrestler, obviously. I talk about wrestling, and I'm certainly not an expert and would never claim myself to be, but I think that's one of those moves that if you really wanted to make it look good, you'd have to darn near hurt your opponent, because the cave-in is essentially just a jumping kick. Well, I guess, like a jumping stomp onto your opponent. And in order to make that look good, you'd have to stomp your opponent in the chest, which is not ideal, because the reason it doesn't look good with Kofi or Cameron Grimes is because they have to pull back up before their opponent hits the mat, and so it doesn't look like they drove them down, it just looks like they slipped. So I think that's just one of those moves, it's kind of like the coup de grace or the swanton bomb, where if you are going to actually make connection with it, it's going to hurt, and if you try to help your opponent on it, it just doesn't look as good. And so that's one of those moves where I certainly don't blame Cameron Grimes or Kofi Kingston. I think that you might just have to not use that move because you're going to have to hurt somebody to use it properly, and that's absolutely not what anybody wants. But obviously not worth it. So Priest and Grimes have a pretty good match, and then Priest hits a swinging inverted neck breaker. I couldn't think of the name of the move. It's Cody's Crossroads, while Cameron Grimes has his feet on the second rope, which made it look like it hurt a lot. That was a really cool spot. He basically hits, Priest does a spinning kick. It was a Trouble in Paradise, while Cameron Grimes was sitting between the middle and top rope with his back facing the ring, and then he falls backwards, Cameron Grimes does, and Damian Priest catches him, hits the Crossroads, I'm just going to call it Crossroads, and then pins him for the 1-2-3. So Damian Priest wins, and then he puts his vest back on, starts talking to the camera. He says, "Keith Lee, Dominik Dijakovic, I'm going to be real interested in who comes out of the main event as champ." And so maybe we're getting Damian Priest challenging Keith Lee, presumably, when Keith Lee retains the title. So that is interesting because Damian Priest is now a face, and Keith Lee is also a face, so I don't know if we're doing maybe Karrion Kross first, or if we're going to give Keith Lee some opponents first. I'm not quite sure, but I always like the person winning a match and then calling somebody out. I think that's an interesting way to do it. Damian Priest should certainly be in the main event picture. He's certainly earned that with his character and what he's able to do in the ring, and he's now a face, so that'll be an interesting new way to come into it. So, we'll see. We cut outside again, and it's earlier in the day when Io Shirai is arriving. She's going to be defending her NXT Women's title against Tegan Nox tonight. Timothy Thatcher has really what's just an enhancement match, and he has a single leg Boston Crab locked in. The guy taps out, but he won't release the hold. And Oney Lorcan comes out with just no shirt and blue jeans and attacks Timothy Thatcher. So Oney Lorcan already lost to Timothy Thatcher, but Oney Lorcan is the kind of guy where if you beat him in a fight, you better start going to a different bar because he's going to keep trying to fight you until he's dead. This is your friendly reminder that Oney Lorcan is a great follow on Twitter. He types all his tweets in uppercase, so you have to yell his tweets in your head when you're doing them. He gets into a lot of fights, tweets about his crazy dad. It's great. Go follow him. Really funny. Follow me first, and then Oney Lorcan. Or, you know what, you can do Oney Lorcan, then me. My feelings aren't going to be hurt because I'm not going to know the order you did it in. In my heart, I will, and in my heart, I know that you know you will. So, you know, just kind of keep that in mind. But Oney Lorcan's great, and I'm glad that they're using him here. It's clearly to get Timothy Thatcher over and get him a more legitimate opponent for him to beat. And I think that that would be a really good styles match. I think they're both kind of bruisers, and Oney Lorcan's kind of a brawler. Timothy Thatcher can certainly do that if he's more technical. So maybe we'll get that next week. I'm not sure, but Oney Lorcan's going to be a great foil for Timothy Thatcher for a little, presumably mini feud they're going to have. And we cut to the back, and it's Tegan Nox being interviewed. She says she wants to be one of the best ever, and she says tonight will be her night. It won't be, but it'll be a great match. And in a way, it can be her night. You don't have to win the championship to get over. You don't have to go over to get over. You have to have an opponent that brings out your strengths, hides your weaknesses, and can make you shine and can make you look legitimate. And if Tegan Nox gets that tonight from Io Shirai, that will do so much for her, whereas if she just won the title in a match that didn't get her over, it wouldn't mean as much. You can get more out of a loss than a win if it's done correctly. So hopefully we can get that done. Well, that's going to actually be our main event, so we'll get a chance to see. And we cut. Tom Phillips is alone again at commentary. It still makes me giggle that he is just by himself at commentary because the other commentators are at home or in a studio somewhere. And so Tom Phillips just looks alone. He looks like the kid at lunch who doesn't have friends. And it makes me sad, but it's also funny. He's talking about Santos Escobar. So that's still his name. We're just going to go with Santos Escobar. It's hard to take a heel seriously when he says his name is Santos Escobar, because it just makes me giggle, which is not necessarily what you want from a heel. But yep, we're still doing that. And it's a vignette of Escobar. It's in a nice house talking to his two bodyguards. They're toasting with a drink. They run down Drake Maverick and Breezango. And Escobar talks up Raul Mendoza and Joaquin Wilde, who are the two heavies or bodyguards who are toasting with him. He says he took the cruiserweight title from the sideshow to the main show. He's partially right about that. It's been featured more since he's won it on NXT, but he's also wrestling on 205 Live a lot, where there's not a crowd, so it's just Performance Center, and that's a trained response from the Performance Center crowd. So it certainly seems more important, just because real live crowds didn't vibe with 205 Live as well. And it also takes place either right before or right after a show, so they're drained or they're not primed for a show yet. But the Cruiserweight title being on NXT is a big deal. When we did the first Cruiserweight tournament, it felt like the Cruiserweight Championship was going to be a huge deal. And then the Cruiserweights get their own show, 205 Live. And then you find out, number one, that they're going to be, I want to say it was recorded after SmackDown. So the crowd was usually dead. And also, the reason Cruiserweights worked so well in WCW is because they were working a completely different style than the main eventer. So if you were a fan of wrestling, you were there for the Cruiserweights. If you were a fan of sports entertainment, you were there for the main event. No judgment on either one of those things. But Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero wrestled very differently than Hulk Hogan and Goldberg. And the problem is that the Cruiserweights wrestle the same style as the main roster. And so there's not anything special about the Cruiserweight division. It's just smaller guys and girls. So it doesn't work as well because there's nothing to separate it. I mean, the ropes are purple. That's cool. Purple's my favorite color. But I never watched 205 Live because there's nothing special about it. It's not the men and women's fault that compete on the show. It's just it was set up kind of for failure. And so the Cruiserweight title being featured on NXT Weekly definitely helps with that. NXT, to me, is a main roster show now. It's a third brand, Raw, SmackDown, NXT. We established that at Survivor Series, and just about every pay-per-view week that has a takeover, because takeovers usually ends up being a better show top to bottom. And so the Cruiserweight title being a part of that makes it feel more important, and I think Escobar is kind of reaping the benefits from that at the moment. Aside from his dumb name, he feels more important now because he's featured on what I consider to be a main roster show, as opposed to just 205 Live, where a lot of fans would just forget about him. So again, he's right about that to a degree. And we cut from that to another recap of Keith Lee winning the title from Adam Cole, and then we cut and Dijakovic is out first for the title match. I was surprised that this wasn't the main event. For a second, I forgot the women's title was also on the show. The way they set it up, I just assumed it would be a main event. Dijakovic and Keith Lee has been a great feud when they've both been in NXT. And with Dijakovic going to the main roster, it seems like it'll be a while before we see them in the ring again. And that's okay. It's kind of like Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, where when they first came to the main roster, they obviously feuded in NXT and on indies before that, but when they got to the main roster, WWE had a bad habit of just putting them together a lot, and number one, Kevin Owens was probably going to win, but number two, they wrestled so much that they had great chemistry, obviously, and they always had great matches, but it started to feel less and less important because they were always wrestling each other, and then eventually they get separated, and so if they come back together, that heat will be back because they haven't been together in a while. Dijakovic and Keith Lee is kind of similar, where they've wrestled a lot, whether it's in triple threats with Damian Priest or one-on-one. They've been in the ring together a lot, and so you run the risk of it losing its special feel, but with Dijakovic going to the main roster, seems like it's going to be a minute before Keith Lee is up on the main roster, and so you have a separation organically. So we'll definitely get back to it. There was some talk that, I forget if it was Dijakovic or Keith Lee, said that they wanted to compete in a main event of WrestleMania together. And I can definitely see that happening and being really great. And I really hope that it happens, because Dijakovic is going to be called up first, and then Keith Lee's going to get called up after that at some point. That's absolutely a WrestleMania-worthy program if you put it together right, and they're certainly not going to disappoint when they're in the ring, so I would love to see that as their next match. Probably won't happen. They'll probably have more matches on the main roster, but you can let a boy dream. It occurs to me that both titles are on the line, the North American and the NXT title, so I wonder if Keith Lee's always going to defend both belts, or if he'll do like a Becky Lynch thing when she had the Raw and SmackDown women's titles, where she defended it against, who was it? It was Lacey Evans and Bayley in the same night on a pay-per-view. I want to say it was Money in the Bank, where she just had two matches on the card. That's a great way to run somebody down physically, so I wouldn't recommend that. Maybe it'll be a situation where he has a North American title match on TV and then an NXT title match on a takeover. Or maybe he'll lose the North American championship. I'm not quite sure, but I wouldn't think he would defend both belts every time. I don't know. But it's got to be certainly one of those options. So I'm going to be right no matter what. And so that's good for me. This is an odd match that WWE as a whole doesn't usually do. It's a face versus face match, which they usually do a face and a heel, or a good guy and a bad guy. They usually don't do two good guys together. And it's one where both of the wrestlers very clearly respect each other, and in kayfabe or in the context of the TV show, are really enjoying fighting each other. So you don't have the traditional heat of a wrestling match where there's a heel pulling dastardly deals or the face is firing up on the heel. You just have two guys that look like they really enjoy wrestling each other. I really like that dynamic. I wouldn't want it all the time. I like personal issues in a match. It helps tell the story, but this is really cool to watch them in the ring together. And so Keith Lee goes for the pounce outside, but Dijakovic moves. Keith Lee learns from last week, and he actually stops himself before he goes through the hockey barriers. Last week he crashed through against Adam Cole, but he learns. And Keith Lee hits the Big Bang Catastrophe. Still can't believe that move is called that, and I love it. There's no way WWE knows that those letters mean that other thing. Look it up. But it's so funny to me that that's his finishing name. It's great. And you could tell Moro knows too, the way he pronounces it. He really puts an emphasis on the B and the B and the C. Moro gets it. Unfortunately, I wasn't overwhelmed by this match. Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic have definitely had better, and this was probably their weakest match, but it was still really fun to watch. It was hopefully a WrestleMania preview a few years down the line. Just kind of felt like it was kind of put together and didn't seem like they had a lot of time, and maybe Keith Lee was still beat up from last week, which is understandable. But again, it was probably their weakest match, but even their weakest match is something fun to watch, so Keith Lee and Dijakovic are showing respect to each other in the ring when the lights go out. The spotlight comes on and Scarlett is at the entrance ramp. At this point, Dijakovic bails out of the ring, which I always think is really funny when somebody bails out of the ring because they aren't supposed to be a part of this segment. So it looks like Dijakovic just abandoned his friend when this lady started walking out of the ring. Scarlett walks down to ringside and she pulls out a bag, like a black velvet bag, and she, on the ring apron, pours out the pieces of the broken hourglass. A couple weeks ago, Keith Lee broke the hourglass as Adam Cole was looking at it in the back. And so she did essentially the same thing she did to Adam Cole, but instead of placing the hourglass with the sands falling through, she just put the broken pieces. And Keith Lee just looks on. I'm probably in the minority here. I don't want this. Karrion Kross doesn't do anything for me too terribly. He's interesting in the ring. He's very intense. His entrance is great. Scarlett's great. His vignettes don't do it for me. And the TikTok thing basically being the only thing he says doesn't do it for me. I think my problem is more that it would be weird if Karrion Kross lost, if he gets an opportunity at Keith Lee. But It would also be really weird and more weird if Keith Lee lost. I don't think that you would have Keith Lee make history like this and win the NXT and North American titles just to defend it once against Dominic Dijakovic and then lose to Karrion Kross. I don't think Karrion Kross is that guy yet. I think he can be, but he feels more like a guy that's going to go to the main roster very fast as opposed to somebody who's going to be North American or NXT or both champions. I'm not the biggest fan of this, and if they fight, I hope Keith Lee retains, just because I think winning both of those titles for the first time is too special to just move it on to somebody else. So we'll see. They definitely have an eye to it, so we'll see what they want to do. Cut in the back, and it's Dijakovic being interviewed. He says, it doesn't even feel like I was in the ring with Keith Lee. He says, Keith Lee's on another level. He said, Karrion Kross is good, but Lee is totally different. And of course, Karrion Kross walks up on Dijakovic. Dijakovic says, you got something to say. And Kross speaks, but it sounded like it was in a different language. I'm not sure if it was, or if it was a different one. I'm not entirely sure. But Dijakovic says, do it. And they start fighting, and they essentially are in the back, and so they fight outside the double doors, and there's kind of, it looks like a performance center area. I'm not sure if there was a ring back there, but there's a barricade, and they're just punching each other, and Karrion Kross basically either suplexes or back body drops Dijakovic over a barrier that was back there onto the floor, and Dijakovic is just out, and Karrion Kross is just staring at him and eventually walks past him and says TikTok, which at this point is just kind of an odd thing for a guy to keep saying all the time. So I don't know if Dijakovic is going to come back for a match with Karrion Kross, or if that was just a way to move Karrion Kross into a very personal issue with Keith Lee. The attack was too fast, I guess, for Keith Lee to have come back and found them fighting. So that'll give Keith Lee motivation to go against Karrion Kross, maybe. So hell of a send-off if that was Dijakovic's send-off. And so we have our main event. Tegan Nox is out for the NXT Women's title match. We get a tail of the tape for both women. This always makes the match feel like a fight to me. Kind of goes over their styles and their reach and so on and so forth. They're both in the ring, and during the intros, Tegan Nox puts her hand out for a handshake and Io slaps her hand away. The intros are just interrupted, they stop, and we start the match. And I was trying to think, and I don't remember a time in my recent memory where those intros were interrupted like that. You'd think it would happen more with heels and bad guys, with good guys, but I can't remember it happening in the recent past. I'm sure it has, and I'm just not remembering it, but it's not something you see a lot, and I really liked it, because we're here to fight, you just disrespected me, I'm not going to wait for these intros to finish. I like it. Io is great at making her opponent look great, and look even better than they are. Tegan Nox is a fantastic wrestler, but Io Shirai is taking her to another level. Io's a perfect champion. That's why AJ Styles is a great Intercontinental champ, Drew McIntyre is a great WWE champ, and Sasha and Bayley are great tag champs, and Bayley is a great women's champion. That's part of the reason Braun Strowman doesn't quite feel right, because you have to work a certain style with him. That's why Goldberg didn't work except for the Brock Lesnar program, because you have to work a very specific short match. Io, on the other hand, is one of the most versatile champions in all of WWE, and it shows, and she's great at putting people over without losing to them. At some point in the match, Io hit a 619, and it's always weird seeing anybody but Rey Mysterio do that move, but I liked it. It occurs to me, Tegan's getting a lot of offense in this match, more than I thought she would, and it's doing great things for her. But eventually, Io does hit the moonsault and retains the NXT Women's title. You knew that was going to happen, but it was a great match. Io Shirai looks great coming out of it. She retains her title. More importantly, Tegan Nox looks great and looks like she could have legitimately beaten Io which is what a great champion can do. It's kind of the Ric Flair thing, where Ric Flair would always walk out with the title, but whoever your territory's big babyface or good guy was, you left that arena thinking, if that babyface gets another chance at Ric Flair, they're going to win that title. And they made me believe that if Tegan Nox and Io Shirai have to fight again down the road, there's a chance Io Shirai could win. And I went into it knowing Tegan Nox wasn't going to win, but Tegan Nox was elevated in my eyes because of this match. So, Io is by the entrance ramp with the title when Dakota Kai comes in from off screen and kicks Io in the face just with a front kick, knocks her out, and it seems like we have ourselves a new challenger. That's interesting that we're going to Dakota Kai. I like that. Dakota Kai is a great heel who hasn't really gotten as over as I thought she was going to based on the way they set up the heel turn in the first place on Tegan Nox and attacking her bad leg. But now Dakota Kai gets the same chance Tegan Nox did. Dakota Kai's not going to beat Io Shirai for the women's title, but that's not the point. The point is Io Shirai is now in a unique position where she can challenge whomever, or whomever can challenge her, and by virtue of Io Shirai being as good as she is, she can get people over while still retaining the championship. And that's always what you want with your champion. And that's exciting. What else was exciting was this week's episode, and hopefully this week's podcast. So, we covered a lot here. I'm excited to see what we're going to do next week, if we're going to get Karrion Kross and Keith Lee, or if we're going to do Damian Priest first. How long Karrion Kross is going to wait, I don't know. I'm excited to get Dakota Kai and Io Shirai. That's going to be fantastic. I'm excited to see what Timothy Thatcher and Oney Lorcan are going to do. Probably fight a lot, punch each other a lot. That's going to be fun as well. But we will cover that next week. With NXT being done, that means my time is up as well. Again, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm ZachNXT, ZachNXT. We're always talking about wrestling and everything you'd want to know over there. If you have any questions, comments, suggestions, things you want to see added, things you want to see taken out, let me know over there. I answer questions there. Sometimes those questions or suggestions make it into the show. But you let me know what you thought about NXT this week. In the meantime, that's my time. I have been Zachary Smith. You have been fantastic. Thank you for listening.